for filed rule ARC 1033C, page 889. Oh, and the 10-2 bulletin, I'm sorry. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Joe's not here. This was distributed to the committee electronically, but these are our copies if you didn't have them.
Would you state your name for the record?
Certainly. My name is Kent Niebel, and I'm legal director for the Iowa Board of Medicine.
Mark Bowden, director of the Board of Medicine.
If you would give us a brief.
The first filed rule, ARC 10033C, just eliminates some board rules that dealt with immunizations in response to legislation that was filed in the last session that eliminates the requirement for the rules. The law now addresses those issues.
We had the, I'm just curious about something kind of off topic. We had the dentist talk to us earlier about inspections, permitting, all different types of things for places that administer anesthesia. Are any of our doctor's offices or clinics inspected?
Not by the Iowa Board of Medicine. The board does not have that legislative mandate. If there are health facilities that are inspected by other agencies within state government, inspections and appeals for one, but the Board of Medicine has no legislative direction to provide those services and certainly doesn't have the staff or resources.
We would
inspect an office if a complaint was based, but it would be a responsive. It wouldn't be a proactive review. If there was a Chapter 13 has standards of practice for office-based practices, so if there was a response to that, we would be there, but we're not routinely inspecting an office as a proactive way.
Are there any types of permits to administer anesthesia?
Not under the purview of the Board of Medicine.
Okay, I need to think about this. Okay, well, how did the public hearing go?
The hearing was held on August 28th. It lasted 3.5 hours. We were at the state Wallace building.
She's talking about the immunization.
Immunization?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I was off on a different topic.
Sure. No hearing has been held, and there's been no negative comment. We're eliminating an unnecessary rule.
Okay. Any questions from the committee? Any comments from the public? Okay. Next up.
ARC 1034C is rules that have been filed to establish standards of practice for physicians who prescribe or administer abortion-inducing drugs.
Okay. Now I'll ask my public hearing question.
Well, our hearing was held on August 28th, and it was 3.5 hours at the Wallace State Office Building. We had when the rule had been filed, we began receiving public comment, so a written comment as well. So at the hearing, there were 28 presentations, and by the deadline for the submission of public comments, we had received roughly 244 comments from them during this period. The period was an extended period. It was 15 days longer than what the rule required to receive comments. So, and those comments were published on the board's website as they were received. So I feel like we had a good dialogue at our public hearing.
Are there any questions from the committee? Senator Courtney.
Madam Chair, just a couple. This is talked about this last, last month. So I'm a little bit confused. This rule is about prescribing or administering abortion-inducing drugs. Is that the only telemedicine we do in this state, just abortion-inducing drugs?
It is not.
What else do we do?
I'm not sure we're fully aware of that, but we realize that there are telemedicine is being utilized in many areas of practice of medicine.
Before the board ruled on or made this ruling, didn't they want to look at see statewide everywhere this was being used?
I've been with the board for over 15 years. The board, at different junctures in that over the last 10 years, has looked at addressing the broad issue of telemedicine on three separate occasions. I served on a committee as part of the Federation of State Medical Boards. I went to Washington, D.C. We started the process of establishing national guidelines for that process. Unfortunately, with the rapid changes in technology, that kind of bogged down at the federal level, at the national level. The board looked at proposed rules that I had drafted for it on two other occasions. It took input from the Hospital Association and other healthcare organizations, and ultimately couldn't come up with standards for the entire practice of telemedicine because it's hard to be aware of where it's being practiced, what types are being practiced. And every time that they tried to apply general standards, people in the healthcare field could point out areas that would violate the rules proposed by the board.
Why do you think then, Kent, you've been on the board for 15 years, why do you think that the board picked out this one area to rule that telemedicine wouldn't work when they know and you know that there are others? Why would you just pick out this one? Why wouldn't you pick out, for instance, a stroke victim? Why wouldn't you say, you know, that's pretty dangerous, we ought not do that? I know you've been around a while, would you have any idea why they just pick out abortion over strokes or heart attacks or whatever might be happening around the state?
It was in response to a petition filed pursuant to 17A. A specific petition which proposed a specific rule, and this is the board's response.
So do you think, I'm just asking for your opinion, that the board considers this much more serious than a stroke victim in Oskaloosa or somewhere that's getting a doctor from Des Moines via television? This is probably more serious than that. Do you think they think that?
No, I think the board reviews standards of practice every board meeting they have. They review hundreds of cases that come before it that raise specific concerns about a specific situation, and they address those on a case-by-case basis. So if that complaint came to us, the board would review it carefully and determine whether the physician met the standard of care. In this case, a petition was submitted to the board via the law, via the purpose that it's in Iowa Code 17A, is to give the public an opportunity to petition the board for rules to solve problems. And I think in this case, the board felt that the rules were appropriate.
Do you think that it's... seems to me, maybe I won't say do you think, I'll just say what I think. It seems that this would be a good time to review all telemedicine in the state. That's what the board does, is review things like that. Wouldn't it be a good time to review everything and say, you know, maybe we should not be doing a stroke victim halfway across the state. Maybe the doctor should be there. Maybe it's more important. Isn't this a good time to do that? Wouldn't it seem likely that would be, rather than pick out one issue that's very contentious, to say the least, wouldn't it be better to review the whole thing statewide?
My personal opinion is that they should. And in fact, that's part of the statement that they provided towards these rules, is that that's something they need to look at going forward.
I think I'd also point out that you're characterizing this rule as telemedicine when really it's about a patient-physician relationship. It's about that aspect of it. It may impact telemedicine, but it's about the concern that there isn't a valid patient-physician relationship in the prescribing of a very heavily regulated federal drug. The physicians who prescribe that medication have to sign an agreement with the FDA. They have to sign an agreement with the drug manufacturer. It's not a prescription that they write that you take to Walmart. The expectation is that the physician deliver that prescription personally. So It's about a physician-patient relationship. It does have impact as in this particular case, but it's really not about telemedicine per se. It's about a patient-physician relationship.
Do you know, then, how many years is this, have they been doing it this way?
We understand since 2008. The board became aware of this in 2010.
Are we aware, then, in that length of time, this terribly strong drug, that there have been some problems with it, that folks have had complications and possibly death or whatever? Has that happened in those years?
The federal guidelines point to complications that have occurred with the medication.
Have any happened here in Iowa that you know?
We're not aware of them per se. I mean, in terms of what has the board received.
Wouldn't that be something the board would right away look at and say, you know, there have been this many deaths or this many sicknesses or people got terribly ill? Wouldn't you look at that probably?
The board promulgates rules many times in a very proactive way. It's not necessarily complaint driven.
But this was complaint driven, right?
This was petition driven.
Yeah. Kind of the same thing as a complaint.
Well, I think there's a big distinction. I mean, the board receives hundreds, between 600 and 800 complaints a year, and the board looks at each of those cases individually and rules on that specific setting on whether that physician licensee met the standard of care. When a petition for rulemaking is filed with the board, it has an obligation to look at it in a completely different setting. It's not in response to a single patient harm or a single patient complaint. It's in response to does the board need to establish standards of practice for an area of medicine? And in this case, they voted to approve those standards of practice. So I think it's very different than the individual complaints that the board receives on a daily basis. Just because 17A allows for the citizenry to bring that issue before the board in a much broader sense than a single patient complaint.
Okay. Well, it just seems to me that I feel my obligation sitting on this board that I would suggest that the Board of Medicine look statewide at every telemedicine event there is. I think you ought to look statewide at everyone to decide what's serious and what isn't serious, what should be stopped, what shouldn't be stopped, rather than just single out one.
The board has expressed that its expectations for telemedicine is the same standard as it would be with an in-person consultation. I mean, that's been an expressed position the board has taken as it has looked at the complaints. The physicians who are practicing under telemedicine are held to the same standards as a physician who is meeting with the patient. They wouldn't use that tool as an excuse for deviating from standards.
So what does that mean? Does that mean that a doctor dealing with a stroke victim a couple hundred miles away? I don't really understand what you mean there when you say that it's the same standard of care, but you're saying they can't do this abortion drug, but they can do the stroke. I don't quite understand what you're saying.
If that came to us, the board would look at the services provided under that circumstances, and if the physician were unable to collect the data that the board felt was necessary for the stroke victim or was unable to communicate appropriately with that patient appropriately, they would find a violation of the standard of care. And I think they're saying, in general, they believe that, I think one of the distinctions is this, when for many physicians utilizing telemedicine, there is an established physician-patient relationship. They've seen this patient in person, they've treated them sometimes for years, and then as that patient relationship has developed, they utilize telemedicine or technology to continue to provide care to an established patient. I think in this circumstances, one of the concerns the board has is that in many, if not most of these instances, this could be the first contact that the physician and the patient had.
But many times, Mr. Niebuhr, if it was heart attack or stroke, wouldn't that be probably the first time then too? I mean, I have heart disease, and if something happens to me out in the middle of nowhere, they're not going to call my doctor in Iowa City. They're going to call the first doctor they can get. He's not going to know me, and he's going to be treating me via the radio or TV. for my heart disease, and he doesn't know me from Adam. So,
but who's going to contact them? Your primary care physician, who you have an established relationship with?
I would say probably the guy that finds me in the ditch where my car stopped. That's who's probably going to contact him, the paramedic or whatever. That's what I'm saying, Mr. Neeble. It's one thing if I'm in Burlington and they're my general practitioner's contacting my doctor in Iowa City, but what if I'm along the road going down 163 for home and I have a heart event and go in the ditch? The paramedic's going to come. He's going to get on his radio. I don't know if they have TVs on there or not, but he's going to be communicating with a doctor that doesn't know me, and that doctor's going to be treating me on that radio or TV. I don't see the difference other than the fact that I won't be having an abortion because 66-year-old men don't have abortions. I don't know what difference there is in those two situations. I'm going to be getting terrible, big-time drugs. It's going to be a doctor that doesn't know me. It's going to be a doctor and a paramedic that have no relationship, no personal relationship to me. They're just trying to treat my problem. I just don't see the difference.
Well, that's an emergent situation. You're talking here about an elective procedure. And I would also say that in most generally accepted telemedicine practices, there's going to be a clinic or a physician that is actually the enabler for this telecommunication to occur. It's not unlike the idea that within the standards of practice is a physician to make a referral that you need to see a specialist. And so your physician collects information about you and provides that to another physician. But that is achieved within the standards because your physician is there. Your physician is a part of that collection of information.
Well, I don't know what else to say, Madam Chair. I can count real good today, and I've been losing a lot, but I'm going to move the session delay on this rule, and I'm sure that I'll lose that vote, but I'm going to move it anyway. I believe that this is arbitrary. I believe it's only because it's an abortion issue, and no matter how you feel about abortion, federal law is federal law. Some folks don't understand that, but federal law is federal law. You want to change federal law, there's all kinds of ways to start doing that. But this, in my view, is arbitrary, and I'm going to move the session delay. Thank you.
There's a lot of comments and public input before we
talk
about your motion.
I should say at the appropriate time, Madam Chair.
Are you finished, Senator Courtney? And we'll bring up your motion later. And you'll wait 1 minute. It was my understanding that one of the problems with this particular, I'll just call it webcam abortions, was that the people who were utilizing it were not following the FDA protocol. And that, I did a lot of, because I don't just take anybody at their word, I did a lot of research since the last meeting, and printed out some of the medication guides and some of the FDA protocol on this medicine. And this is FDA, for the Mifeprex, which is the first medicine. So when the woman goes in, she's examined sometimes by people that are, you know, questionably qualified, I would think. She's given a brief interview by a doctor at a remote location, and then a door opens and she takes some pills out and takes the ones that are supposed to be taken the first day, right? And according to the FDA protocol, it says you're supposed to take 3 of those tablets the first day. And what has been happening is they're giving 1 instead of 3. And what that first pill does, it separates the baby from the uterine lining, and then it dies. So then on day three, the patient takes home this other medicine that's called misoprostol, and the protocol for that is to take two tablets orally. It says that once. I'm not sure what that means. What that does, it sheds the uterine lining and the baby that is dead. So when, and it's also supposed to take effect at 49, no more than 49 days from the last menstrual period. Well, it's being administered up to 63 days. And when I was reading through all of these different warnings everywhere, it says it's dangerous to go beyond 49 days. So we're allowing it to happen. Who should not take Mifeprex? It has been, some women should not take it. Do not take it if it has been more than 49 days since your last menstrual period. What happens? You have heavy bleeding. If you bleed enough to soak through two thick pads per hour for two consecutive hours, or if you're concerned about heavy bleeding, and about one out of every 100 women, bleeding can be so heavy that it requires a surgical procedure to stop it. There's you're supposed to contact your provider immediately when that happens. This rule puts in place a procedure for the patient to contact someone when they're having these type of symptoms. Right now, they have not been to their doctor. They're with someone else that they don't have a relationship with. And I understand you're trying to set up a patient-doctor relationship with having the doctor in the room, right? And I just heard someone go, pff. So let me tell you, I found a blog because there's women who are afraid to contact anybody, and they are filling up pads about every minute, and they're on a blog instead of contacting their doctor because they don't have a doctor in this case. So I mean, I will be happy to make copies of what these medicines do, but the second medicine that's taken, not only is there heavy bleeding immediately, but there's bleeding could be for weeks. And I don't think that has been told to anybody on this committee, because I specifically asked the last time about, well, what is it in comparison, and how afraid would the woman be? And I'm trying to put myself in that woman's place and feel like if I was, I know there's times I was at home thinking, am I having, and this is just a regular mince. So should I go to the doctor here? Something big happening? And, but no, you have these women then that are, it's, I'm really happy that you're doing this. So, Senator Shelgren, started to.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I guess I would like to make a request of the department and also respond to a couple of things that have been said recently. First, with response to Representative Pentengill's concerns, at the last meeting we dealt with this issue, we also had one of the doctors, an abortionist, come in and explain that this is also being done down to mothers who are 12 years old. And so my concern ends up being with that statement is that there's not enough time for some of these you know, potential mothers to even understand what a normal cycle would be versus an abnormal cycle, and therefore not necessarily make the best educated decisions. The next question was, Senator Courtney had brought up a concern about telemedicine and asking the question on why we're not doing a full review. I would strongly encourage the department to review all telemedicine, but I will say very clearly that there's a major difference between telemedicine that deals with a clear-cut Supreme Court case where the Supreme Court has already weighed in and made decisions on what needs to be done versus other procedures like heart issues where there is no case that's clear-cut and defined. The federal government has also weighed in, obviously, on these cases. I'd like to read real quickly to you, and the reason I want to do this is because it states how important this is. This is actually Roe versus Wade's decision. It says the state has a legitimate interest in seeing to it that abortion, like any other medical procedure, is performed under circumstances that ensure maximum safety for the patient. This interest obviously extends at least to the performing physician and his staff, to the facility involved, to the availability of aftercare, and the adequate provisions for any complication or emergency that may arise. That's one of the issues that I think this rule is dealing with. I think it's very important, and as I said, most cases we deal with don't already have a defined case that says this is what we expect. Further, it says, all of these are factors the woman and her responsible physician necessarily will consider in that consultation. There's an expectation that prior to an abortion, there will be a consultation with a physician and a discussion so the physician will understand the mental state and the physical state of the subject. The last part of this also says, up to those points, the abortion decision in all of its aspects is inherently and primarily a medical decision. The basic responsibility for it must rest with the physician. If an individual practitioner abuses the privilege of exercising proper medical judgment, the usual remedies, judicial and interprofessional, are available. It actually encourages us to work through intra-professional systems, in which case we are doing here, in order to maintain that professionalism. And so for me, I look at this and I say, you know, we have some issues that we're dealing with here. Okay, the process that we've gone through, there have been 14 deaths. There have been over 2,200 serious complications. I understand that when this was first implemented, we didn't have the facts we have in front of us. The numbers that I just stated were from the FDA. This is from the federal government in utilizing these medicines. Clearly, there's more information now than there has been in the past. And so I am not a doctor. I don't pretend to be one. But I do respect the decision of this board on what they're trying to accomplish. And I would say that we definitely need, as legislators, to pay attention to it. If the facts on the ground change, when we feel that things need to be changed at the legislative level, I understand that. But in the meantime, I'll have to trust the professionals in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Shelgren. Another thing, and I got a little bit emotional there and forgot the third part of the FDA protocol, was the 14-day follow-up visit, because there are pieces of tissue still in there which is causing the deaths by sepsis. And this blog, almost every one of them came back on and said, I ended up having to have a DNC because I still had, and they name off a bunch of different types of tissue. And some of them had not miscarried at all like they were supposed to, and they had all that bleeding, all that upset, and then they still had to have a DNC. And if you don't have the 14-day follow-up, then how are you protecting the women from developing infections and everything else? So I guess that FDA thing just clinched it for me, because they're the ones that collect the data. And I do have one other question. The dentist had an incident report. So there was reporting to their board if there was any deaths or infections or adverse effects from any procedures that they did regarding anesthesia. Is there anything in our code or your rules that would require incidents to be reported?
No. There is not. I assume they're far more common in the practice of medicine, a far more common result, and therefore there aren't specific reporting requirements, whereas in dentistry, I think it's very uncommon, so it's easier to reach a reporting requirement.
Okay.
but there are no reporting requirements.
The reporting requirement in Iowa is just simply the procedure, and that's in aggregate to the Iowa Department of Public Health. But it's not about adverse outcomes or that. It's about the number.
So these FDA results could be skewed to the lesser because there may not be the reporting requirements that there should have been. Okay, I'm sorry, but any other comments from the committee or questions? Okay, any public comment? And if you would stick to the rule, please, which is a doctor present for the physical exam and a follow-up and parental notification.
Madam Chair,
yes,
members of the committee, my name is Janine Freeman, and I'm here representing the Iowa Medical Society. You do have our letter of comment to the committee regarding our concerns with respect to this rule. The first thing I would like to note for you is that ethically, the Iowa Medical Society does adhere to what AMA ethics say about each individual physician's deeply held personal convictions relative to abortion. We respect that. Our letter of comment to you, like our letter of comment and our comments at the public hearing before the Iowa Board of Medicine, did not address the abortion issue, even though this rule is developed within the context of abortion. We are highly concerned about the processes used by the Board of Medicine in coming to a final decision to adopt this rule. When I say that, I fully recognize the board went through the rulemaking process. The reason why we have these concerns is actually built upon a long history that we have had, and a history we very much appreciate, in working with the Iowa Board of Medicine on rules governing physicians in the state of Iowa. The rule you have before you today is a disciplinary rule. Any physician that doesn't follow each and every step relative to this disciplinary rule, as you noted, Madam Chair, the different criteria of the rule, is subject to a full range of sanction by the Iowa Board of Medicine. It is very common for us to appear before the board on disciplinary rules and to bring challenge to what those disciplinary rules are saying on several grounds. Number one, what evidence do you have as an Iowa Board of Medicine through your complaint processes and your investigation processes where you develop a factual record that there is a problem with physician practice in this state in this particular area of rulemaking? In this case, the board cited nothing. Furthermore, the board even recognized and said, we already know an investigation was fully conducted and a determination made that the processes and procedures used in this particular telemedicine procedure did not violate standards of medical practice. So rulemaking or a record, a factual record had been established and the board elected to ignore it. No new evidence had come before the board relative to this issue. No evidence also relative to the FDA was presented to say that the FDA had found problems or difficulties with the processes and procedures. So there is really no dynamic record of problems in this state justifying a disciplinary rule by the Iowa Board of Medicine. And that is unusual. That has not happened before in the rulemaking processes that we've worked with this board in developing disciplinary rules. Secondly, this board is not a professional standard-setting board. It's a licensing board empowered by the General Assembly to license. It's a disciplinary board empowered to discipline physicians in the state of Iowa. It is not a professional standard-setting board. When it does adopt disciplinary rules because it's identified problems and it's saying to physician licensees, these are our expectations. What do we look for? Consistency with existing standards of medical practice. For instance, in this case, maybe the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists What do they say? Is this rule consistent with what's required? Is what's happening in terms of practice in the state of Iowa relative to telemedicine abortions inconsistent with what ACOG might require? That is not a matter of record in this case. What's happening in terms of practice, ordinary daily medical practice? Again, inconsistencies, incompetencies, lack of safety. Every medical procedure carries medical risk. You cannot eliminate, even with standards of medical practice, all of the medical risk. That was not examined by this board. Also, based on testimony received at the hearing, the board did not stop. The board did not say, let's take into account what was made or said by all the different parties that came before us. Are there options? Ordinarily, with a disciplinary rule, the board is not looking to say, we no longer will allow a procedure in the state. The board is looking at options and less restrictive alternatives to basically say, these are things that we would require, we would be looking for in terms of our investigation of a physician. This is how we might discipline you. Your administrative rules digest says that the upshot of these rules is that this procedure cannot be provided via telemedicine. That ordinarily is not the way the Iowa Medical Board looks to discipline physicians, is to impact the provision of the service. It looks to assure the service is provided in a more safe, effective, and competent way. The overall receipt of this rule is troublesome to the physician community. Absolutely anybody has a right to file a petition for rulemaking. We respect that. We regard that. That's not our issue. The issue is that the board received a petition for rulemaking. The exact language of the rule that was proposed by the petitioners and written by whomever, we have no idea. We have no idea the expertise of the party that wrote this rule. We have no idea of what was considered in terms of writing this rule and its consistency or inconsistency with medical practice standards or other criteria that might be appropriate. A silent author. The board received that petition and that rule and very quickly, with little discussion, said, we move to make it our own. Now, what kind of confidence does that instill in terms of a licensing board charged with disciplining physicians in our state and being credible in the way that they do engage in that discipline? The board went through a three and a half hour public hearing, very respectful, received evidence from all sides, and in the end, the board said, still like that rule that we received, did not look at the criteria of that rule, did not examine the importance or the necessity or the consistency with medical standard practice of each of the criteria or elements of that rule. It simply adopted the rule. In looking at the rule itself, there are implications. Physicians are concerned about, if you say this relative to this medical procedure, whether delivered via telemedicine or in a physician's office, what are you saying about other medical practice procedures, whether delivered via telemedicine or in an outpatient setting or in another setting? For instance, personal presence of the physician. Procedures now engaged in clearly do show, as the evidence indicates, that the physician via telemedicine does observe the taking of the medication, that first pill, that first medication. If it requires a physician to be in the office, what is, and to be personally watching the patient follow the swallow the pill, what is that saying not only about telemedicine and medications that might be ordered there, but what about complex medication therapies in other environments? Why is it different for this procedure? What supports that kind of a conclusion? Why did the board accept that without question? Delegation to other competent medical professionals. Yes, we understand we're not making opinion or a judgment relative to what's done now and relying upon other medical expertise in this particular process that's engaged in the state of Iowa. But physicians do rely upon other medical professionals to assist them in the overall evaluation, documentation, and determination of a medical diagnosis and treatment moving forward. What does this rule say about that? Follow-up in a very narrowly prescribed period of time. No one's going to argue about follow-up. But to say follow-up must occur in 12 to 18 days, well, what about 9 days? Well, what about 22 days? I mean, why 12 to 18 days by the same physician in the very same clinic site? Why? And what is that saying? I mean, suppose the patient were to say, I know you're going to be in Perry the next day. Physicians do a lot of satellite clinics. Physicians have different office sites. They move, they travel. That's Iowa. That's geography. Why must you go back to the very same building site? Questions were not entered into by this licensing board in order to give appropriate credibility to what was adopted as a licensing rule as proposed and never changed by the licensing board by an outside unidentified author claiming to say this is medical standard practice. As I noted, physicians also are concerned about what this means not only with respect to telemedicine, but to the development by this licensing board of other disciplinary rules. What's the expectation of a licensing board like the Iowa Board of Medicine, top licensing board affecting physicians in this state, in disciplining physicians? It's important that that board be required to examine, engage in a robust discussion, and come to an appropriate conclusion about whether or not indeed a physician is violating medical standards of care, whether or not a physician is placing a patient in inappropriate jeopardy or lack of safety. That did not occur here. That accountability did not come forth in this particular set of rulemaking. As I mentioned, we have a deep appreciation for the Iowa Board of Medicine. We very much have appreciated our years of work with that board. It's rare that when we have worked with a board that that board hasn't come back and said, we understand some of your comments, we'll adjust our rule accordingly. When we're able and others are able to present good evidence, that just simply did not occur here. This rulemaking is not credible. It does not establish sufficient accountability for this board. It's based on a poor rulemaking record. And as a result, we believe the rule should not be allowed to proceed in its current form. Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment.
So do you think the FDA has the ability to set standards for delivering medicine?
The FDA, as you noted, does have a medication guide. Now, is that maybe is one indicia or one item of evidence to say this is something that you must do? The things that you were even citing, Representative Pettengill, does this rule reflect those?
Exactly. It does. Day one at your provider's office, it tells how many pills you're supposed to take. That is not happening. It's after getting a physician, a physical exam, and signing a patient agreement. Day three, at your provider's office. Not at home, but
and
at
not
your
in this
provider's
rule.
Office. This is the FDA guidelines for this medicine.
But it's not in this rule.
No, it isn't. But day 14 is.
There are many guidelines that are not necessarily in rule.
I think mm-hmm. they should go back three times to the doctor and follow what the FDA said. So about day 14 at your provider's office, this follow-up visit is very important. So does the IMA have a problem with the day 14 part?
We are not making comments on what should actually be in the rule. What we are saying is that the rule should reflect a robust discussion among affected parties about the various indices of what is good medical practice relative to the delivery of this particular service via telemedicine and or in a physician's office. The FDA would be one factor, and any kind of evidence indicating the FDA's dissatisfaction or belief that processes and procedures that now are engaged in are inappropriate. ACOG standards would be another factor. There are other criteria or experiences of physicians in delivering the service. That kind of examination, that kind of discussion did not occur.
Senator Shelgren.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I have a quick question for you.
Sure.
Earlier in listening to you speak, I was curious. You talked about the Iowa Medical Board, and they are predominantly a licensing and discipline board.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, is it my understanding that you feel that they probably shouldn't be propagating these rules?
What we're saying is that when they do promulgate rules to discipline physicians, they have an obligation to establish how those rules are consistent with standards of medical care. They need to go to professional standard-setting bodies and say, this is what's required. Help us understand what's good standards.
But do they only submit rules for disciplining physicians, or do they submit rules in general for standard procedures?
Their rules are really disciplinary rules. Even that section of the Iowa Code that talks about standards of medical practice, those are disciplinary rules.
Do you say that when they originally promulgated these rules, they were outside of their rulemaking authority? Because originally they set up this whole process. And so if you're telling me that they shouldn't have changed the rules, then they probably shouldn't have set them up in the first place.
No, what I'm saying here is a set of rules came to the licensing board. They did not themselves make a decision to develop rules. An outside party brought them these rules, the rules that came to them. And it was their obligation as a licensing board to assure that before they would say to physicians in the state of Iowa, we're going to discipline you if you don't follow these rules, they needed to engage in an examination of each criteria in those rules to determine and assess whether or not they were necessary, whether or not they reflected good standards of medical care, whether or not there might have been more appropriate options in order to assure that this medical service is provided consistent with standards of medical care and patient safety. They accepted the rules. They did not engage in that kind of examination.
So when they first put through the rules, mm-hmm. that was within their purview of decision making, and then they received a recommendation on a way to change the rules, you know, I know that I've been aware of this for now a couple months, so I guess I'm not quite understanding that they didn't go through the process of reviewing this recommendation for rule changes. Now, granted, it sounds like they didn't change any of the recommendations, but just because somebody puts through a rule they may think was good or may not think was good, I would hate to think that any recommendation that we've gotten as legislators is one we feel that we're not doing our job unless we change.
Could I just offer one clarification for you? The issue of authority, yes, the board has the ability to accept a petition and move. We recognize that. The issue of good exercise of that authority is a question that we have on the table. And that is, the board said, we're going to take these rules as ours with no examination of the criteria of the rules. That petition came to them, and 3 days later, they sat down and said, we're okay with them. We're moving forward. One of the board members said, slow down. Let's look at this. Let's examine them. And that is a pattern of the board. That's where we were taken back, because it's very usual for the board to say, we're going to appoint a task force. We're going to look at this issue. We're going to study it further. We're going to receive input from the outside public. We'll consult peer review experts. We'll look at what the standards are in the field. All of those things are important to good, robust, fair, and credible disciplinary rules imposed on physicians in the state of Iowa. That's what was really missing here.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions from the committee? Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Any other comments from the public? Hello.
Hello.
Can you state your name for the record?
My name is Sharon Malero. I'm an attorney at the Davis Brown Law Firm. Our law firm has been retained to file a lawsuit on behalf of Planned Parenthood and Dr. Jill Meadows, asserting claims against the Board of Medicine and certain individual board members under the Administrative Procedures Act, as well as under the Iowa Constitution and the Federal Constitution. It's our position that there was no evidence submitted to the Board of Medicine that Planned Parenthood's telemedicine delivery system is unsafe. In fact, the evidence is to the contrary, and that the new rule will cause harm to Iowa women. Therefore, we would ask that this committee delay the effective date of this rule pending a judicial determination so that Planned Parenthood of the Heartland and their doctors can maintain the status quo to their patients. Thank you.
How does it harm women?
Excuse me?
You said that if we don't delay it, it's going to harm women.
It's our position that the earlier in the process that there's an abortion, the safer it is for the woman. This is a safe procedure. If it requires women to not have a telemedicine abortion using the medical delivery system, and they have to have a surgical abortion, it's going to be more complications.
Those medicines can still be delivered. They just have to have a doctor there and have a 14-day follow-up.
Well,
and have the examination by the doctor.
That's assuming that there's a doctor in the clinic every day and that a woman has the transportation to get to the clinic within the short period of time, as you have noted, in order to get the medication. So because of factors in terms of time and ability and people, they might not be able to have access to this medicine, whether it's in person or via telemedicine, making it a requirement that they then have a surgical abortion.
Senator Shogren.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You mentioned that there was concerns with regards to both the constitutionality at the state level and at the federal level. Can you elaborate on which state and federal constitutional concerns there are?
Iowa Constitution, Article 1, due process and equal protection. United States Constitution, 14th Amendment, due process, and equal protection.
The reason I'm curious is I want to obviously go through because I'm very curious as to the merits of the case, but I also am not one that just because someone files a suit, do I feel that in every case we need to go ahead and not implement the rules and the laws of the state of Iowa. If that were the case, then we'd be having suits all over the place just so people could continue the status quo. But I definitely will follow up in depth with the constitutional concerns that you have with this because they obviously would be concerns to me also.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Any other public comment? Okay. Senator, you had a motion?
Yes, I moved for a session delay on this rule.
Okay, I'm going to request a roll call.
Certainly.
Representative Heddens, are you on? Okay. No.
Yes.
Senator Corton?
Yes.
Representative Heddens?
Yes.
Senator Yochum?
Yes.
Representative Wilson? Representative Smith?
No.
Senator Smith?
No.
Representative Vanderbilt?
No.
All right, well, that's it for today. Could we have a motion to recess?
I motion we recess.